Welcome to the third episode of Sounds from the Ziggurat podcast. My name's Mike and I like talking about the Brighton music scene in the 2000s and playing tracks from artists of the era. These are quite often artists that are friends of mine, friendships that were forged from sharing the stage many years ago at long-lost Brighton venues such as the Freebutt, Sumo's and Hector's House. I want to start off by saying a quick thanks for the kind words and support I've received since putting out the first two episodes. They were recorded well before anything went live, so it was lovely to get such a positive reaction. Even better is that some people want to get involved with the show too. I have had messages with artist suggestions and other messages with actual audio submissions for the podcast, taken from people's private vaults. Hopefully I'll get time in the future to digitise my old mini disc collection, as there could well be some rare and exciting bangers hidden away on yet another failed Sony media format. These songs would have either been recorded through an external microphone plugged into the mini disc player, or taken from the soundboard at venues like the Pressure Point. We would often give the sound guy Andy, who was excellent, a blank disc to capture our live set and listen to it when we returned home. Remember, this is before you could whip out your smartphone and capture a whole gig in HD quality. We're talking old Sharp GX20s, Motorola's R's, and Nokia N-Gages, as opposed to iPhones and their Android equivalents. Okay, that wasn't accurate as no one had an N-Gage, but you catch my drift. As a side note, I did actually do some testing during this time, and the machine I was partnered up with was the N-Gage. Anyway, I digress. Look out for future podcasts testing tales of the N-Gage and the side talk phenomenon coming to your favourite client, never. We are going to kick off the show with a track by Tenderhooks. If you're a musician in Brighton, you probably have Marcus from Tenderhooks as a social media buddy, even if you don't know who he is. The guy is a machine when it comes to promotion of his band, and they paved the way with their brand of ska, pop, alt, blues and rocky original material, performed with a confidence only garnered from years of experience. Tenderhooks started life in 2005. They have since released five albums, filmed some great Brighton-based music videos, and continue to play gigs at pubs and festivals all over the south. I last saw them in one of my locals, The Admiral, at the bottom of Elm Grove, which as a side note, I recommend checking out for fans of current local live music. I'm going to play a track from Tenderhooks' 2005 release, Devil Rides White Horses. This is Jealous Love.
It's far.
That was Brighton band Tenderhooks. For information on music and future shows, find them at tenderhooks.bandcamp.com and facebook.com/tenderhooks. Hateball formed in May 2002 and effortlessly smashed out their energetic and upbeat punk rock and roll all over Sussex and London, supporting some massive names in the process, including the likes of Breed 77, The Damned, Therapy, the Anti-Nowhere League, the UK Subs and Funeral for a Friend. A pretty impressive roster of support gigs, as well as playing their own headline shows. Hateball got through to the final of the infamous Emergenza Festival too, joining my band Infurion and three busloads of fans hitting the road to London's Astoria, where we played to a packed audience, battling it out for a festival spot in Germany. Well, so we all thought, but again, I'm saving that for another podcast. Hateball also got through to the final of a competition being run by Southern FM, which we'll now recognise as Heart Radio. This was for a chance to play at Preston Park's well-established event, Party in the Park, alongside groundbreaking acts such as Daniel Bedingfield and McFly. It would have been amazing if they'd won, but looking at the lineup and type of station Southern FM was, I think the odds may have always been stacked against them. The heat they did win before moving on to the final at Karma was held at the Marina's West Quay Bar, which is a posh front for a Wetherspoons. This must have occurred in the day where they actually paid for music to be played in the background whilst eating one of their themed meals and drinking a cheap pint of ale. Nowadays, it's full of television screens pumping bloody Sky News in without an air of melody in sight. Still, 4 to 5 pints for under a tenner is more than welcome on Mike's current financial income. After Hateball had been gigging a couple of years, they put out their album Live Now, Die Later, capturing the DIY and progressive ethic many bands were starting to adopt as technology became more accessible and the prospect of getting a record deal was still a mean feat. This is the title track and the track used on the This Is Brighton Core compilation, which I'll be talking about later. Turn your podcast play up to the maximum you can without damaging your ears, and if you're out and about, perhaps even on the tube, how about enjoying the track even more by trying to start a mosh with members of the public? This is Live Now, Die Later. I briefly touched on BrightonRock.net in the last episode, The website was set up as a way to keep in touch with fellow friends and rockers after the demise of the Hungry Years down on Brighton Seafront. I was introduced to the webmasters Timmy and Matty when frequenting Hovetown Hall for their monthly rock nights. Yes, that is a thing that happened, and it was brilliant. Odd, but brilliant. Probably the antithesis of what one might expect from a rock night, other than the music. There was space to dance, big tables to commune over, a large balcony area, non-sticky floors, and clean toilets. It ran for a number of years, and my friends and I would consume many a beer whilst headbanging to Enter Sandman and acting out the words of Alice Cooper's Poison. I did not, repeat did not, get involved with any topless shenanigans should Manowar have braced the speakers. My band and I approached the DJs about playing one of the tracks from our newest EP, and although my memory gets a bit sketchy here, I do remember a small crowd of us with horns in the air banging our heads to our song End of Days on one occasion. Hearing our recording played over this enormous PA system was incredible, and I'd always be thankful that we had the encouragement from the guys early on. BrightonRock.net's best commodity was its forum and the interesting characters that inhabited it. We had band members, promoters, DJs, and general rock fans who all had some kind of attachment to the Brighton music scene. It was an awesome resource for advice and tremendously important in spreading the word for upcoming gigs. This was before Facebook was the behemoth it is now, with its ability to help organise every part of a show from contacting venues to selling tickets. Of course, we also had MySpace back then, which for those that don't remember it, appeared to be the commercial kickstart of social media, but it was still very limited in what it could do. Bandwise, it served as a place you could host MP3s. Promoters of potential shows would start to ask acts for MySpace links over requesting a CD or cassette. I always thought this was mad because I'm more of a fan of physical media, but I later came to understand that some of these promoters would get hundreds of CDs a week, which could be a little overwhelming. You can still find the remnants of the BrightonRock.net website online, and if you go to tib.brighton-rock.net, you'll be able to find a near complete copy of the This Is Brightoncore album. This was a CD put together by Alex, one of the more passionate members of the forum. He managed to orchestrate a 16-track album full of local bands and have it on the counter of music shop Bionic in North Street. On June 1st, 2004, there was a release party at the Hobgoblin pub. I have an email exchange regarding the event, saying our band and the excellent Mr. Green Vendetta were supposed to be on the bill, playing alongside the CD's debut, but I have no recollection of this. It wouldn't surprise me if there was a cock-up at the Hobgoblin, as I've since found a few different email exchanges alluding to badly run gigs, difficult sound issues, and problems with entitled bands. However, a release party definitely did occur. I do remember being there, and it was a great night. I'm then led to believe that we headed out to the Pav Tav to continue the celebrations at Club Night The Pit. Good times. Okay, this next track is Slaughterhouse 57 with Dog Day Sun.
We'll be right back.
Another band that cut their teeth at the Free Butt was Slaughterhouse 57. The band formed in the later stages of 2001 and in their first year together managed to release two demos. The latter was recorded at Madeira Drive's concealed recording suite Studio 284. Studio 284 was unfortunately closed in 2015 due to the stability of the arches, and unfortunately most of that area under the promenade has now been closed to the public. Even now, it is still waiting for much needed investment to bring it back to its glory days. I remember it used to be such a beautiful walk on a nice sunny day, and even held a special vibe when the heavens had opened and shelter needed to be taken under the Victorian infrastructure. It also served as an exciting runway towards the Concord 2 venue. I have seen many bands there, and my anticipation for the night ahead would gradually build the closer we got to it. Fortunately for the owner of Studio 284, he has since found a new space to operate and opened Black Rock Subway Studios in 2016, not far away from the original 284 site. Over the course of Slaughterhouse 57's time together, they had the opportunity to support bands such as The Exploited, Discharge, Peter and the Test Tube Babies, and Anal Beard, whilst also joining bands Disco Volante and Flower City Knuckleheads on tour. They released an EP in 2005 on the Killer Records label called Fuck Tomorrow, which I think is great advice. One of the most rock and roll moments of the band's lifetime was when their guitarist Bill put things on hold for a short period of time after driving a nail through his hand in some sort of landscape gardening based stigmata. After the demise of the band, the members went their separate ways, and it was with great sadness I discovered that original drummer Heather Moon took her own life on December 24th, 2014. In a more electronic-based future episode of the podcast, I'm hoping to play some material by Slaughterhouse member Brett, who now creates future garage and ambient-based soundscapes under the alias Greenside. This episode's more recent track is from new artist on the scene, the magnificently named Cockwomble. Their debut EP was released in June and is a catchy, bitingly relevant cross-section of today's landscape and is sure to rally a crowd when played live. I implore you to visit their website at cockwombleband.com. All the usual social links are there, including the video for the track we're about to play. I was a big fan of singer-guitarist Ali's work in Sparrow, and this punkier-laced avenue of songwriting appears to be a comfortable addition to his CV. Joined by Vicky on bass and Leah on drums, this is Henchman.
We'll be right back.
going to end this episode of the podcast with my old band. Infurion came together when three friends started jamming on our lunch breaks at school. We would play the talent shows in the main assembly hall and use our instrument skills to get respectful grades in music class too, as well as copy and pasting information from the internet and Microsoft Encarta straight onto our school books. Hey, sir. After school has ended, we kept jamming in Sire's spare room, and eventually I would go to college and meet Francis Rossi wannabe Adam Marchant. I lent him a copy of Metallica's Black Album, and he soon became an acceptable friend. Now he is one of my best. He was brought in to play bass, but eventually moved on to guitar and vocals, because he seems to have a knack of taking things over, and Pete, our original guitarist, was moving on anyway. I can't remember if he had a choice in that matter, but we're nice guys, so I'm sure it was mutual. Eventually, we changed our name from Hello John to Infurion. My other half found the word Empyrean in the dictionary, although I'm still not quite sure if that's how you pronounce it, which meant the highest point in heaven, and we changed the spelling and pronunciation to make it unique, as I really felt it was important to have something that was original and would be the only thing to return results in Ask Jeeves or its alternatives when searched for on the internet. Over the next few years, Infurion played many gigs all over Sussex and occasionally travelled to London to bring our own brand of noise to any rock and metal head that wanted to hear us. We released a number of self-produced CDs, recording them in Sy's spare room in our bassist Chris's basement, where he had a whole studio set up. These were some of the most fun and exciting times I've ever had as a musician. The freedom to write and record our own material in our own time and then release it at gigs was incredible. Gigs for us were very social experiences, in the early days especially. Friends and family would all come to see us, and the vibe and interactions between bands was usually good-spirited too. We'll talk more about that in a future episode. The biggest band that we had the absolute pleasure to support was Mastodon at the Concord 2. Unfortunately, I was not as familiar with the band at the time, but they became one of my favourites after I purchased the incredible Leviathan. This Concord 2 gig became infamous for two reasons. One, that Sy and myself got a bit carried away with a large bag of weed circulating backstage, and thus became a little, shall we say, unhelpful when it came to packing the gear away at the end. Something which I had to use our Infurion message board to apologise for the next day, when we were reminded by Chris what had happened. Secondly, this also led to one of the most insightful and creative reviews Infurion ever had accorded to them, when a user on the brightonrock.net forum simply described us as shit. Despite being together for a number of years, Infurion to me was one of those things that felt like it happened so fast I didn't realise what was happening until it wasn't happening anymore. I do miss playing the songs and hope that Dave, Sy, Ad and myself are one day able to forge another reunion gig in the not-too-distant future. The song I'm going to play came from a random jam we were having in the garden at my parents' house. As with most of my stories, alcohol was obviously being consumed. I was strumming some chords around the garden table with some friends in the band, whilst we sung along with random lyrics. My contribution to this was what I could see right in front of me, so I sang, "Mobiles on the table," and it became the chorus to the song. Later on, when we had sobered up, we realised that was a fucking ridiculous thing to say and axed the lyric. We were, however, left with, when it was complete, an almost 8-minute epic of a song that we simply titled Mobiles. Young naive Mike probably thought it was our paranoid android, Bohemian Rhapsody, or Day in the Life, and although that was definitely not the case, it provided a great intro to our live set and really got the audience's heads banging by the time it had picked up the pace in the second half. Shout out to my dad here, as this was always his favourite Infurion song. This is Mobiles. Thank you. Thanks for listening to episode 3 of Sounds from the Ziggurat podcast. Please leave comments and stories of bands from the era you think I should check out, or find me at my Twitter at @_Ziggurat. I now also have a separate Facebook group regarding the podcast and 2000s Brighton music scene. This has mainly been set up so that I do not have to bother my regular Facebook friends, who have zero interest in anything I have to say on the subject. Or anything at all, perhaps. I will also be uploading old flyers and posters to the group from my personal archives, which should be a nice compliment to the podcast. If you have any material from solo projects, or from a band you are in, either recently or from the 2000s period, in no matter what format, I would love to hear from you. It's been fun and therapeutic running this podcast so far, and any help I can garner to continue it would be incredibly welcomed. Thanks for listening.